This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 21st of September, 2021. We have markets in pretty hairy mode here. We are bouncing back, but yesterday, certainly a capitulation trade with that big move. Of course, we sort of flagged the big support level that had fallen, and a lot of the damage had been done actually even before the U.S. Open yesterday. Oh, of course, this we're drawing the Fibonacci lines here on slide two after the fact. That's always a convenient time to do it, right? But it is still kind of interesting. We did go just beyond the 5% correction level and hit that 100-day moving average and actually extended a bit below that. And I was just playing around with some support levels to figure out where the retracements were, and I came up with this 161.8 as the target yesterday. So it looks to me like if that is the case, and regardless, that last wave, the resistance level that is important here would be the 61.8% retracement, very conveniently located right at that 55-day moving average. So I think that's sort of the level we can look at as key resistance, whether we're going to, you know, go for the style of reversal we saw on the previous big the big reversals off of sell-offs that we saw nearly every month for the last several months, or whether this is going to see a bigger two-wave correction. Peter, I don't know if you have any input on that front. Of course, a sea of red on our equity theme baskets led by the likes of crypto and blockchain, which really proved that they're pretty much correlated with the rest of the risk on, risk off space.
Exactly. I think it's the main takeaway here is that a lot of the theme baskets that we have created are high beta themes. Maybe not a big surprise. A lot of them are tuned to growth. So when you have a market down 1.5%, we're seeing a lot of our baskets twice as much. So it is high beta, and especially on the downside moves. And you're right, John, on the crypto basket. And I think hopefully with the move yesterday, we can put this whole idea to rest that crypto is, and Bitcoin for instance, is digital safe haven. It's just not true. It's very, very much a risk on, risk off asset like everything else in this world. And we know a lot of young people are in this space. So when they see a correction like this, they probably get scared in their crypto holding as well. I want to mention on slide three, because I was looking at this last night, we had quite a fascinating bounce back, 1.3% move from the intraday lows around 25 minutes before the close in the S&P 500 futures. When I say the close, I mean the cash equity close at 4 o'clock local time in New York. And technical, it was ALCO driven. There was, a lot of things had to be squared and hedging activities. I don't think it was the typical retail flow buying the dip, but I think, as I wrote last night, this is the first real buy the dip test in 11 months. We have to go all the way back to October. And we talked much about, you mentioned the 55-day moving average. Other commentaries mentioned the 50-day. So I was just looking at the spread since the 1st of March 2009 in the S&P 500 futures between the price of that future, of those futures contracts, versus the 50-day moving average. And as you can see here on slide three, it's a very negatively skewed distribution. And we hit minus 2.3% intraday yesterday. So we were getting there, I think around the 45th percentile. So, we can move further down. It could happen. The VIX is elevated and the situation is still quite fluid and dynamic in China. We have the mainland Chinese investors coming back online tomorrow from holiday. And then on Thursday, we have those two bond payments from Evergrande. And the S&P was out saying that Evergrande is very much likely to default. I've written a little piece about what we expect from the Evergrande and what we do expect technically from the S&P 500. They call it the first real buy the dip test in 11 months. You can read that on analysis.saxo. And I just looked at the MSCI World this morning. So we extended for another trading session. We are down minus 3.9% on drawdown. So the rally is still intact. Let's see where it can hold today.
When you say the rally, you mean the without a 5% correction?
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, John.
All right. And then we've mentioned yesterday as well the fact that one of the scary things being that the traditional safe haven asset class, safe haven bonds, was not really reacting. We did see a bit into bonds yesterday, but relative to what's going on in equities, a very modest move. Put up a slide on slide four. And I would still suspect that if we do somehow manage to stabilize risk-wise, we're going to be going back up higher with these yields. So I think it's very interesting to watch. again, this sort of lack of the ability to find safe havens. Also in gold, Ole.
Yeah, just a quick remark on gold, because we did see gold actually trade higher yesterday, but very disappointing small move considering what was happening elsewhere. And I think we have to look beneath the bonnet on the yield engine to see what's going on. And that's we've basically found that the main contributor to the yield drop yesterday was break-even yields coming down, with real yields staying stuck here around -1%. So not any support in the gold market for now. So for today, just here, keep it on 22 to the downside in silver. If that breaks, we could see renewed weakness in both.
All right, and then on the on the safe haven front, Althea, what's your impression here of the bond market? We saw a bit of a safe haven bid and bonds yesterday, still pretty modest stuff, again, relative to what's going on in risky assets. We have that, and then you have a bit of input on the Evergrande story with this idea that S&P is floating, that it's basically headed for a default.
Well, John, first of all, regarding your point of this flight to safety and the fact that we didn't see yields reacting much. Well, yields, yes, they did react, but we have to keep in mind that this week is a week full of central banks' monetary policy meetings, and at the core, at the center of their discussion is going to be how to pull stimulus away from the economy. So that's still bearish for the bond market. And that's probably why we don't see a massive bid in government bonds at the moment. But I think that in Europe, the move was quite interesting. We had bonds falling considerably during the day. And the big point in Europe is that I think that yields dropped not only on the Evergrande story, but also on the natural gas story emerging from the UK. And I believe that the natural gas story is going to be a much bigger disruptor in the European space compared to Evergrande. I want to take you to slide number 7. And today, bond yields are going to be on focus because we have the German DMO issuing 7-year notes. We have seen recently a lot of weakness during German bonds auctions. And if we see this weakness sustained also today, then we might see a reversal of the rally we have seen yesterday. Otherwise, if we see strong demand, we can see yields dropped further. Anyway, we expect bond yields to trade range bound between -0.26% and -0.37% for this week ahead. Regarding the Evergrande story that you mentioned, I have published a piece on Saxo.com where I look at the bonds of Evergrande. And the thing is that I come from a distressed debt background. And the only way that I can see this playing out is through liquidation or restructuring. I don't think that the Chinese government is interested to do a bailout for the simple reason that would move debt from the company to the state, and that would pose a risk to Chinese government bonds. And the most likely scenario is that the Chinese government basically to ask somebody else to do the restructuring of Evergrande, and the liquidation is the least likely scenario because obviously there is too many stakeholders involved, too many jobs, and that would definitely shake up markets. But the big problem in the Chinese credit space now, John, is that, as you can see in slide 8, Evergrande has propelled the credit spreads in all the Asian and Chinese corporate bond space. So the problem is that high-yield corporate bonds at the beginning of summer, around June, they were able to finance themselves at 8% in the US dollar market. But now those yields spike to 14%. That's a huge change in cost of funding. And that's where would we see a weakness in the Asian corporate bond space going forward.
Yeah, and we've seen some very quiet credit markets in general elsewhere, but you're bringing in this natural gas story into the picture for European credit, because we are faced with some of these companies that have promised an end price to their consumers, but then their input price has really spiked badly.
Yes, absolutely. So I want just to take you to the slide 9. And is just to show you that there is some sort of impact already to utility corporate bonds because of the natural gas story. And yesterday we have seen spreads in the energy credit space to widen faster than in the US. And you see the comparison between euro utility corporate yields versus US dollars utility corporate yields. My take here, John, is that it's just the beginning of this weakness of energy companies, and this is going to be like a much bigger story on the political sphere as well as in the corporate bond space as going forward and going towards winter.
All right, Ann. And just a bit of a segue there into the general risk sentiment backdrop and our risk indicator, which you can see on slide 12, a bit of a time for an update after a day like yesterday. And you can see that while we directionally have gone very quickly south on the global risk indicator because of a couple of inputs, are emerging market credit and corporate credit into that model. Emerging market credit has gone the wrong way a little bit, very modestly so. Corporate credit has been going completely in the tightening direction just until yesterday when we finally saw a bit of a widening. So those are the two. That credit space is just a laggard compared to previous cycles. And so we still have very much a risk-on environment according to this, although I think this will play catch up and we will at least dip into somewhat negative territory in coming days, even if things gets relatively stable. But just rounding out this energy story, Ole, which is really dominating in Europe, what's your focus here in this market as we look at some crazy stories coming across meat shortages in the UK? We can go through that. It's a very interesting story because basically, I'll go ahead and go through myself. Basically the fertilizer plants that are shutting down because of the high price of natural gas. Those fertilizer plants, to make this ammonium nitrate, they strip the actual molecules to make it, and they have a CO2, so carbon dioxide, as a side product, which is then fed to other industries, especially slaughterhouses. And this is a bit disturbing for vegetarians might want to tune out here, where they basically numb or put to sleep the especially pigs before the slaughter. So there are 100,000 pigs apparently piling up at breeders, unable to get to the slaughterhouses, etc. This is a crazy situation where we could have UK shells not having meat on their shelves and within days if this continues in the direction some of these articles are talking about. But is there any relief in sight in terms of the supply or the price here?
Well, the short answer, John, is no. And as you were just referring to what you said there, Peter put out a tweet yesterday where he said, we're going through a pretty horrible first phase, but the second phase potentially could be even bigger. And what's going to happen next year if we've got fertilizer prices at record levels? Will farmers buy less? Will they plant less? And what's the agricultural production going to look like next year? So all these issues. But you asked, John, what could help it? And the only thing that can help is more gas. And more gas is right now potentially coming from Equinor in Norway. They've been given permission by the government to turn up the taps, send more gas south to Europe. But obviously what's really needed is increased supplies from Russia. And on a monthly basis, Russia basically booked capacity through these major pipelines from Russia to Europe, through Ukraine, through Poland, into Germany, and also from the old Nord Stream line. And yesterday, basically, they booked no additional capacity. So there's not going to be any additional gas coming next month. As you can see on slide 10, there's a lot of focus on Russia right now because the story about them holding back supplies in order to force through a Nord Stream 2 decision just simply won't go away. European MEPs are now asking raise an inquiry. At the same time, Gazprom is warning about record gas price in Europe will continue to go up. And again, you kind of feel that they hold the key to this whole thing, but the big question is really, do they have the gas? Or do they not have the gas? Are they concerned about their own storage levels at current low levels? But the result, as you can see in the chart, is just incredibly rallying prices, both in Asia and in Europe. So the competition for gas is hotting up across the world. In Asia, state-run media has already talked about the possibility of coal-fired plants running out of fuel this coming winter. So that's coming from a state press. So this is a story that's going to stay with us into the winter. UK right now is hardest hit because so many people have gas coming straight into their homes, and they are on contracts. These contracts cannot be negotiated until next year. That basically means whoever company holds these contracts, they are currently suffering huge losses and more hitting the wall. And that's really a major issue in the US. But what will lead to, and that's probably also why we saw a very shallow correction in oil yesterday, even though we had this quite major amount of risk off, oil found support at the first possible opportunity. As you can see here on the line, that's the previous highs where we bounced from. And at the same time, we also, this is on slide 11, we are right now. And what you have to keep in mind, if you don't have enough gas, if you don't have enough coal, you turn to fuel and you turn to diesel, you turn to heating oil. So this will lead to higher demand for fuel products into the winter, especially from countries who can ill afford these high natural gas prices. So oil will remain supported. Finally, just a quick note on Japan. Pretty clever. They have fixed their gas purchases to they linked their gas purchase to the price of oil. That's how gas used to trade in the past, especially also between Europe and Russia. That was abandoned in Europe because we felt we paid too high price for the gas when oil was high. Now, obviously, it's the complete reverse situation. So you can see on that small insert here on the 11, power price in Japan has hardly changed, while the cost of gas prices has actually gone through the roof in Asia. So well done, the Japanese.
That's an unfortunate situation for the companies involved in that very uncomfortable spread. For sure. I just want to round out the markets here, at least in terms of FX reaction. And I thought it was quite interesting to see when risk sentiment coming so unglued as it did, the dollar was rather sideways. The risk off patterns in FX were fairly calm relative to the backdrop. And then we have a Riksbank meeting today in actually just a few minutes. So by the time you're listening to this, it'll already have happened. How do they respond to that recent inflationary spike we saw in the August Swedish CPI data? You have two-year Swedish rates at the highest they've been since last summer. And Eurostoxx on slide 5, you can see it did rally and sort of respecting the risk off, but it really just crushed back to where it came from. I thought that was a pretty strong performance from the Swedish krona. So as long as the Riksbank cooperates with something indicating they're coming a little bit unglued from their zero rates forever stance, I think it could be interesting or sort of supportive for a Swedish krona strength. And then you can see on slide 6, put up sterling yen. It's really the yen that has responded nicely here. With those U.S. rates coming in lower, that makes the yen safe haven trade, helps activate it. So you saw actually dollar yen lower as well. And sterling seems to be responding in correlation with risk on, risk off. And wow, what a chart. Sterling yen, the big sort of head and shoulders, almost at the double right shoulder. It's also interacting with the 200-day moving average. The Ichimoku cloud situation has been quite interesting over the last couple of rally attempts, et cetera. So that's a really interesting to watch around that sort of neckline area, which is a little bit poorly defined depending on where you want to draw your local supports there. Again, gold, if you see on the FX board, the trend readings not providing that offsetting safe haven flows that it has in the past. So I don't know where, Peter, where traders are going to turn to next. You know, it's all about where do we find confidence from? Is it algorithmic? Is it just the lack of new hedges for hedging of derivatives, et cetera? We're all waiting for the final outcome of this Evergrande situation. It feels a bit uncertain. Of course, we have massive event risk with the FOMC tomorrow, and I'll get a little bit to that in a moment, but I guess that has to be where the next focus will be.
Well, I think that the focus, I mean, the inflation and the interest rate story is still the key thing that could really derail equities. We are at high valuation levels, so there's high expectations. So and that means it's also the market is very sensitive to these interest rates and inflation, which has been very not benign. So the interest rate has been benign, but inflation is still this ghost lurking around in the marketplace. Earnings are strong, but the big question that we have talked about is that, are we beginning to see a margin squeeze on companies? And that we'll know or begin to know in the next in 3 weeks' time when the Q3 earnings season starts in the US. On slide 13, we have some earnings still coming through the pipelines. Lennar, one of the big home builders in the US, reported Q3 earnings ended in August yesterday. The Q3 numbers were basically more or less in line with expectations, but it was the Q4 outlook that really disappointed. The shares were down 3%. They're basically cutting their new orders and delivery numbers against expectations because of a supply crunch. It's very difficult to get building materials. We talked about it yesterday. There's a 5 million shortage of homes in the US, so the demand is there. They also said that demand remains pretty strong in most regions in the US, despite pretty aggressive price hikes on new homes. There are some regions now where you can see the rapid price increase taking some steam off. The demand is coming down a little bit in some regions, but still we have this unbalanced, very strong demand, the situation on the supply side, and we have it in semiconductor, we have it on logistics, we have it on in so many things. It's the world is widely out of balance. And then they also said that there are labor shortage. Slide 14. Earnings from Adobe and FedEx, both after the market closed. We talked about FedEx the other day, but that's our main focus because Adobe is a technology company. They will do fine. I'm pretty sure they will hit their numbers and they will have a party in the extended trading. But FedEx, from the macro perspective, is the one that's really interesting. And we'll go through the numbers in tomorrow's podcast. But the key thing we focus on here is whether they are signaling that they are rapidly rising their freight prices because of the rising costs they're seeing on fuel and labor, et cetera. So that's the key story for tomorrow.
All right. And key story all week on the macro calendar on slide 15, the central banks, the plethora of central banks. Sweden today is quite interesting, as noted before. China, I'm not expecting anything from them, but there it's about the Evergrande situation, contagion risk from that, and how the PBOC is dealing with in terms of managing liquidity, et cetera. Bank of Japan, low expectations. It's all about the political race for who will be the lead candidate in the LDP and how strong the fiscal promise will be, how the market greets that. And I think Japan or the Japanese yen could be interesting for upside as long as yields are falling. But if we get an FOMC that sees a spark higher in yields, there could be a sense of whiplash in something like the Japanese yen. So just generally expecting a more hawkish meeting from the FOMC, unless we just do another day like yesterday or even worse, might give them pause. But I think they've probably sort of decided what they want to say. We think they'd like to get this taper out of the way to be more nimble on further signaling and guidance from there. They can't avoid sending a message via their latest set of forecasts on the economy, especially the longer term inflation. What do they do with that? Do they want to hedge their bets and not look too foolish by raising it a little bit further out for the 2023, et cetera, and then the dot plot itself all could be quite interesting as an input. And then later in the week, Norges Bank, again, first rate high expected. What is the guidance? Bank of England also critical for, since the market has been leaning so aggressively on them, upgrading their rate hike view. So little bits and pieces today as well, with the Hungarian Central Bank out with another rate hike and looking for their guidance as well today. It's been a long one today. There's plenty to talk about in these more high energy markets, but do recognize how and what yesterday's volatility acceleration showed, that the risk gets quite high in both directions, depending on, doesn't matter what side you're trading, the risk does accelerate and pick up in these volatility events. Please recognize that. Stay careful out there. We'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.